Print media is near and dear to our hearts at the Ton Magazine. That should go without saying, and it's probably patently obvious. But in the last year, there's been an influx of some great new magazines, and one of those is Traditional Chopper Magazine. In this episode of Do You Even Chopper podcast, we talk to Traditional Chopper Magazine's Ron Harris. Hey, Ron, how's it going?
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be talking to you about Traditional Chopper Magazine and yourself. You know, we've done a few of these podcasts so far. We've had a couple magazines, and I've just really been impressed with your consistency lately. And I wanted to talk about Traditional Chopper Magazine, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I think the first thing people want to know always is, why did you decide to start a magazine? I mean, it's not a money making venture, I can tell you that.
Yeah. I'm finding that out. Honestly, man, you know, I've been in the custom motorcycle industry, the chopper game, man, for 20 years. I have my own shop, you know, building bikes, custom painting, all that stuff, man. And over the years, you know, I've done stuff. I've worked, you know, with a couple magazines. I used to actually do a lot of stuff with the horse, and you know, after they went away, and I'm just kind of watching, I'm kind of seeing stuff, man. And I've always had that itch, and I had to scratch it, man. And I had, you know, kind of a vision and a kind of a, I don't know, taste that I kind of wanted to produce. And I kind of just went for it. And I mean, Jeff Holt, when I talked to Jeff, I go, dude, I'm going to do this. And Jeff goes, dude, you're an idiot. I'm like, I've never been known to be the smartest man, but you know, so I took a swing at it, man. And I mean, I'm having a blast with it, and I'm meeting some super cool people, seeing some super cool bikes I probably had never seen before, meeting people, like, you know, doing stuff with you, trading some stuff with Carrie, you know, other magazine people, man, really showing support, which is really cool, man. I really like that comedy of it too, man. It's really super cool that all the print media magazine people are pretty much supporting everybody, which that's cool too, man. I'm loving it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, no one wants to see someone fail at something like this, you know. And I haven't really met a magazine person yet who doesn't want to help support other magazines, because I think we all know the kind of pressure that it kind of creates on you. I want to know kind of how you've kind of worked through that. Are you actually on a set quarterly basis, or do you kind of just go with how you're getting it? Like, what's your kind of production style in that regard?
I mean, we print quarterly. Basically, you know, I get everything pretty much ready. Englishman, who used to be the editor for the horse, he's my editor for the magazine, and dude, honestly, without him, I probably never got this thing to print. He's my savior. But yeah, we try to stay consistently quarterly, you know, make sure we're on top of it. You know, try to make sure it's a good mix every time. We just added 8 more pages. We did tech articles last one. This next one, we're going to do one from Bike Week, you know, from our shows there, and some tech, and just trying to, I've been getting great feedback, but what I'm hearing is people want more content to read. So I'm trying to give it to them.
Yeah. I mean, that's the rub is, like, you got to kind of figure out as you do it, what the vibe of your magazine is. I mean, I think that's the great thing about there being more chopper magazines right now, is like, you got some that are a lot of just photos with not a lot of written word, that maybe feel more like classically like a skateboard or surf or motocross style magazine. And then you have some that have a lot of text and a lot of kind of storytelling to it. You have some that are very tech driven now. So, I mean, it's kind of finding that niche. But it seems to me that you had like a pretty clear idea of what you wanted to do from the offset, looking at your run so far. There is like a kind of pretty specific tone you're trying to set. Do you want to kind of talk about that process?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it took us 3 years to get that first issue to print. I mean, it was a battle, man. It was hard because I was so fanatic about how I wanted it to look, you know, once I seen it look. And my thing is just, you know, it's traditional chopper. So, you know, I want that traditional feel. You know, it could be a shiny bike, a ridden bike, you know, BSA, a 750 Honda, you know, and I'm trying to grab more of that kind of stuff, man, because that's forgotten fruit that people don't understand, that 750 Hondas and BSAs and Triumphs were what original chopper stuff was in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I want to keep, that's kind of the feel I'm trying to keep to it. You know, still, you know, a little bit of rugged edge, but still have some nice and shiny stuff too. You know, and that's kind of where my builder's perspective comes in. When I look at stuff, I just have, you know, a feel of what I kind of want to look. And, you know, and there's some stuff I run that's, I'm like, you know, I really don't care for it. But, you know, it's not about me. It's about the readers too. Maybe they like it just because I don't. So I flex a lot on that too. You know, which is tough, man, for me to give up a little bit, but
yeah. But you got a real kind of, like, I think traditional choppers really reminds me of like late 70s, like In the Wind magazines, or or not necessarily Easy Riders, because the amount of just how much Easy Riders was so text heavy compared to, I think, what you're going for. But
right,
some of those late, like the early Horses.
Yep.
You know, some of that kind of style, maybe even the end run of the Choppers magazine of that period, Choppers, you know, because I do recognize, you're right, you're running bikes that a lot of other chopper magazines haven't yet, or not haven't yet, but haven't in a long time. Like,
yeah,
like the Hondas and everything like that, and some digger style bikes. And
I mean, it's a flavor, and that's, you know, that's the one thing, Tim, that's, you know, about all of us guys that have magazine, we all have our flavor of what we like to do. And, you know, man, it's like, you know, you know, I touched on the other day, you know, it's, you know, if you don't like my magazine, it's cool. Go buy a Ton magazine. You don't like a Ton magazine, go buy a Choppers or a Cycle Source or a Greasy Culture. Just buy print media chopper magazines, man. You know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Do you keep up with like the other magazines? Is that, do you kind of check on them to make sure you're not doing similar content, or do you kind of just go on with Horse Blinders?
I pretty much stay on my path and my vision. You know, I pay attention, you know, mostly social media wise, because I hardly get time to even read my own magazine. I get the thumb, you know, go through it before it goes to print, you know, check it, make sure he's got it good, go to print, and that's about it. And you know, it's like, you know, I've done, it's like podcasts like you and I've talked, man. I haven't listened to yours, I haven't even listened to my own. I was sitting there, but it's like, you're just nonstop, man. It keeps going and going and going and going. It's like you're always trying to think of the next thing to try to make it better and make something more, be more creative, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So what one minute, you're working on five now, right?
Actually six. Five six. Just came on.
Five just came out.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. We hit the 1 year mark.
Yeah. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Between one, which you worked on for 3 years, and six you're working on now, and you'll have 3 months, right? Or 3 months or less to kind of work on it. How have you worked on shortening your time frame to put everything together?
I pretty much have, like, you know, I get pretty hot on layout for bikes. And like, as soon as I shoot them, I send, you know, the tech article, everything out, like, look, I need this, pretty much go quick. And then there's a section there, which you've seen, the Chopfather section, which, you know, I try to make sure, you know, I get that. That's the hardest one to get somebody to get written, man, because I don't want to write everything in the magazine, because I like it that everybody writes their own stuff, so it's in their own words.
Yeah.
And that's kind of something that's very important to me. It's like I want it to be in everybody's own words. And you know, like the very first one I did write, which was on Clay Cobb, which Clay was my mentor. Clay taught me everything. I mean, the man, he means the absolute world to me. And the guy epitomized what a real biker and a chop father is. He's just one of the best in my eyes, man. I don't care what anybody thinks. But it's one of those things, man. It's just not writing about someone. It's the experience that you learn from this person that makes it, you know, makes it more in touch, you know, to where it's more real. I mean, we all can just write about, you know, whatever, but it's like, you know, there's somebody that taught you what you know about motorcycle stuff. You write about, you know, you're really going to dig in because it's meaningful. Yeah. And I like people to read that kind of stuff, man, that it's that important to these people, that this person taught me this. This is why I'm where I'm at.
Yeah. Have you run into, just, you know, talking about people writing in their own words, where they just can't write, but they have a beautiful bike. And then, yeah, like, how have you kind of navigated that one? Because I get what you're saying about, and I know other magazines do that, is the putting, letting people put it in their own words. But at a certain point, you got to be able to write too.
Yeah, yeah. Like my buddy Chris, he was on the cover of issue 3. And Chris is great. He used to write a lot of tech articles for The Horse, and he's one of my best friends. And he wrote this short story. I'm like, dude, I know you're a good writer. I'm like, what is this? That's all I got. That's all I got. I'm like, all right, I'll make it work. So as I was like, Englishman, I'm like, dude, we gotta fluff Chris up a little bit. Okay, I got it. But you know, there's times that we have to, you know, tighten a few things up, you know, change a few things, but not very much. I mean, honestly, I've been pretty lucky. Had a couple misspells, but there's not really much we've had to go in and add and do stuff to somebody's stuff, because you and I both know you do that, then they get, what did you do to my story? That's not true. That's not what I said. And then, oh, yeah. So I try to step away from that the much as I can.
Yeah. How do you handle people submitting material to you, and you know they're submitting it like all over everywhere?
I kind of look around. Like I told you, you know, I kind of watch. I go through mostly everybody's social media stuff. You know, if I get something to submit that I don't know, or if it's something, you know, most of the time I go and I'll send it to somebody. Like, hey, man, I'm interested in your bike. You know, has anybody ran it? This, that? No. You know, but people that submit them to me, I look around, I check around. You know, I'll go on their Instagram or their Facebook and see. You know, because most of the time they've already had something, or they have something going, or you just, like, say, go on your site or on, you know, Choppers, and just kind of look around to try to navigate around that. But most bikes, man, but you can kind of look and know, like, okay, this bike's definitely probably being shot. You know, like the ones going on cover 6, you know, I basically had to beg him for that one magazine. He's like, well, I got another magazine. So I don't want to step on anybody else, but I'll give you cover if you let me have this bike. Yeah. And it's a really, really cool bike. Jay Ryan from Gusher Cycles. I don't know if you've seen that digger he built.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but, yeah.
Oh, that thing is, he won best in show at our show in Daytona. And that bike is just, Tim, it is, it's lights out, man. He did some killer fab work, made some cool. I mean, this bike is, so he didn't let me shoot it here in Daytona. So he said, I'm like, well, man, if you get back, so he goes, hey, man, I'm going to let you shoot. I'm like, find me a photographer. I'll pay him. I want that bike.
Yeah, yeah. You have a kind of a coverage area, though, in a way. Like, you're kind of doing the spine of the country in some ways. We've done all over, but we focus on the Pacific Northwest, you know. Mm-hmm. Other ones have their areas. Like, is that by happenstance, or is there just,
well, it's kind of some, I mean, I've got a couple guys on the West Coast, not much, but I mean, it's, I have, so, there's so much here, you know, cause I'm originally from Detroit, man. So when I go back home, you know, I go up there, you know, I usually put a post, I, hey, I'm going out there, and I have dudes hit me up, man. And I've scored some good bikes that way and met some cool people. And, you know, along the way, I have someone, I have my photographer, Debbie, she's in Maryland. She scores a lot of good bikes too. You know, and down here in Florida, man, it's prime pickings down here. I mean, I could go to a bike night and probably snag 6 bikes out of a bike night, you know, and there's so much good stuff out there to get, you know. And I try to, every event that, you know, I do, I try to pick, grab a couple bikes out of there too, just to, you know, to stack up, because they're good and it's hard to get. Because one of these times I'll run into an issue, I'm like, oh my God, I got no content. I'm like, okay, cool, I got all these backup ones. So
yeah, yeah. I mean, that's smartest thing you could do.
Yeah, try to stay ahead of the game. I guess it's a trick. Yeah.
Otherwise, you walk yourself into a problem.
You know.
What would you say is, I mean, thinking about where you have places, you have some people California, some in Northeast, and a lot of Florida stuff. You know, I've been curious about this. What do you think? Because to me, there's a real difference in vibe between California, West Coast Choppers, even up here with like Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina Choppers. What do you think that is it? How do I even ask the question? I don't know.
It's probably like, is there like a divide?
Yeah. Is it just because largely culture is different in those areas and then it just translates through the bikes? Or do you think that there's something more ingrained into the bike culture itself specifically?
I just think a lot more of the West Coast stuff gets more exposure. I will say, to where a lot of the East Coast stuff gets it, but it's not as strong. But I mean, like the quality of this stuff, I mean, these, I mean, it don't matter, East Coast, West Coast, North, South. I mean, there's dudes that are just killing, making, building killer bikes and doing cool stuff, man. I mean, all over. The divide, I don't know. I mean, you get some of the dudes, oh yeah, you know, we're West Coast, or I'm, you know, it's okay, that's fine, you know, whatever. But it's, but most of these dudes, man, they just want to build motorcycles, man, build cool stuff, ride their stuff, you know, do cool shit, you know, so.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I try to stay, you know, how to stay out of the politics of that. I try to stay out of the politics. I mean, like, somebody hits me up, the West Coast got something cool, yeah, I'll run it. I don't care as long as nobody else has.
Yeah. I guess what I'm getting at is, like, the style of the bike itself. Let's think about it from that angle.
Okay.
Like, Southern California up to San Francisco, they defined a style in the late 60s, mm-hmm. early 70s. That's come back around really big on the West Coast in the last decade or so. But that style is very different than how choppers developed elsewhere, because they had to wait until magazines and everything. And by then, that's when you saw the boom of the cheaper choppers. You know, the magazines were running Triumphs. Honda, well, not Easy Riders, but other magazines were running Triumphs, Hondas, like everything under the sun. You still see a lot of that at shows and coverage in the Southeast. You don't see a lot of that pop up at, like, the chopper shows here. There's a different vibe in like what is,
yeah,
quote, acceptable in those communities. And maybe there's communities that are just generationally different as well on top of this. I mean, there's just niches of niches sometimes is what I like to call it. But I do think that there's something to, like, you're getting a very different breed of bike that comes by your path than say myself or not. And I'm just always fascinated on why that might be, especially, like, it's not like we live close. We're talking over the internet. We only know each other because of that.
Right. Right.
Think that still is, or
I don't know, man. That's actually a good question. That's kind of a good one to get. You know, I mean, I know some dudes out on the West Coast, man, that are, God, I can't think of the guy's name, but he's got a collection of stuff, man. I know a couple of them are 750s. They were like some real rare bikes. He's the guy that's got the trike with the dual rear wheels on it. That real real rare one from the 70s. I can't think of the name of it. But anyways, I know he's got a few. I know Dwayne Ballard, you know, Dwayne's on a couple 750s. But there's a lot, man. I think a lot of this stuff, you know, over the years have been shipped back and forth between, you know, West Coast and East Coast too. I think some of that stuff's went around, you know, because I just had a friend of mine's bike pop up. He went and emptied out this old Harley dealer. Lo and behold, this Triumph frame was on the cover of Big Bike magazine. And I'm like, this, and it showed it was like from LA, blah, 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 this whole bike. And it was a cool Triumph, man. He's just got the frame of the tank and everything. And I'm like, you're going to put that together. But I think that some of that mix, like what happened there, you know, these dudes drag them out. They set, you know, things, barn find things, you know, that's where a lot of the stuff comes out. But yeah, it's, I mean, really, dude, I haven't spent a lot of time on the West Coast, man, to really feel the vibe, you know, to see a lot of stuff. A couple times I've been out there. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I mean, maybe I just stumble across it. Maybe I'm just a great junk finder. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, how do you spend your time? That's always a curious, because you have a full-time shop of your own.
Yeah.
You're doing the magazine. I'm sure you're building your own shit or going to swap meets for yourself. Like, how are you dividing that time? I think that's always the big question for people doing this.
Yeah, well, my bikes always come last. I've just finished my one shovel head. I've been working on it for 4 years. I finally got it wired, fired, and done. You're right. Sitting on the hoist, been there, sitting, run. I had to run it right before bike week, and I still ain't pulled it off the hoist yet. But, you know, just, you know, try to keep the balance going, you know, the shop, you know, stay going with that. I mean, most of my work's custom paint work, fabrication. You know, that's where most of my bread and butter's at. I don't really build much for customers anymore. I just build for myself.
Mm.
So that balance kind of keeps there. But just, you know, always keep the gears turning, man, all the time, you know, doing the magazine, the bike, you know, the bike shop. So it always keeps me, keeps my hands in. I'm hands in motorcycles all the time.
Yeah. How did you get into motorcycles?
Honestly, dude, I was, I'm originally a body man, a painter by trade, third generation. And, I worked at the dealership, Pontiac dealership back in Detroit. And then, I opened my shop in 2003. I came down to bike week, actually, in 02. And my first brand new Harley come down here, man. And that was it. I was bit. It was bit. I was it. I come back, I ordered a Paco frame, man. I built this chopper, all this stuff. I come back the next year down here for bike week, hit the shows, you know, started winning. And it was on from there.
Yeah.
And, so I started doing that out of my garage, man. This shitty garage, man. I mean, the thing looked like it was about to fall down. It was so bad. I mean, there's a gap like this in the back corner of the garage of the slab to the wood. It was so bad. And so I just started going in. I was working at the dealership at the time, you know, and stuff. And then in 2008, when the dealership closed the Pontiac line, I went full time in the shop and just having to turn back.
But eventually you left Detroit and came down here.
I moved down to Florida in 2015. Yep. Yeah, I found out I'm allergic to snow.
How big of an ordeal was that? I mean, moving a shop at, a few years after you started yourself, like it seems like you're a glutton for a lot of work.
Yeah, it was rough, man, because I mean, I had my paint booth, my mills, my lays. I mean, it was a chore. It was a chore. It was a lot, man. It was, once I got down here, I just unloaded, setting up. I was like, man, I think I might have made a bad move. But it panned out. It panned out good, man. I mean, everything's good down here. I got good clientele down here. You know, I knew a bunch of people from, you know, being, you know, in the scene for a while, so that helped. But yeah, I mean, it's in the scene's great here, man. I mean, the shop's good here. It's a good vibe.
What town is your shop out of?
I'm in South Daytona area.
So you're right in the heart of it then.
Yeah, but I'm in the thick of the shit.
And maybe that the where you're located might be a part of the answer to this, but how did you get kind of involved with getting a lot of the old horse people over to help launch your magazine?
Well, I mean, I've been tight with the horse, man, for quite a long. I actually got introduced to the horse from Fab Kevin. Me and Fab Kevin became friends, you know, and stuff. We got, you know, I started doing stuff, and I actually, it was a weird story. He's like, hey man, you want a hardtail Englishman's wife's bike? You know, I don't have time to do it. I'm like, sure, I'll do it. So do his hardtail on his bike. Englishman comes out, and I'm building this Triumph for this guy. And I mean, budget build. I mean, it's nothing special.
Yeah.
I put an FZR 600 front end, nothing. He goes, what are you doing with that? So it's a customer's bike. He's like, I want to shoot that for the cover. I'm like, on all the bikes I got here, you want to shoot that damn thing? I was like, all right. So slowly after that, you know, I started getting in with them, man, and getting really close with them guys, Hammer and everybody, man. And they became family. I mean, they really did. They became family. I'm still really cool with all them guys. And then, you know, as I moved down here, I was doing events and stuff. You know, they obviously supported me. And I always helped the magazine as much as I could. And then when they kind of went away, you know, and it was kind of when they went away, and then I just kept pecking at it, and I hit Englishman up. I go, hey man, I got this great idea. What do you think of this? Starting another magazine. When do you want to be an editor? He's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, okay. So like I said, he hung with me them 3 years to get it there. But yeah, man. And it's, you know, he's digging it, man. He's like so into it. And I try to give him as much credit as I can, because I'm telling you, dude, seriously, without him, I wouldn't be here without him. He really puts his heart and soul in it. And he's such a solid person, man. And he's digging it. And he's just solid.
Yeah. How's that relationship between the publisher and the editor kind of come together for what's the final magazine? Because I don't know, a lot of people don't think about that when there is two different people in those roles rather than one person kind of doing both roles.
Well, when we first, I mean, that's what took a lot of it too, is that first issue. You know, we bounced a lot of stuff back and forth. But once we got the layout where we both liked it, you know, we pretty much had the platform laid, man. And then issue two came, you know, a couple adjustments, issue three, a couple. And then, you know, now we're starting to get it right. you know, right there. I mean, it really was not a lot of adjustments once we got that first issue, but getting to that point, I mean, we, me and him, put in a lot of time, a lot of phone calls, a lot of texts. I mean, it was a lot of emails, but we finally got it to where we both were like, yeah, this is it. Let's roll.
Did you have different bikes in that issue at different times, or was the kind of time really more about how you're going to present what you had?
Well, the one thing is that the issue, which number one, the cover, the kid designer, Eric Mills, not a kid guy. He won at one of my shows, and this was one of the horse events. And, you know, he was promised a feature in the magazine, and when they folded, he couldn't get it. And the bike was really good. And he drove his bike like 4 hours to get a shot. And I said, Eric, one way or another, I'm going to get your bike in a magazine. I said, no matter what. So when I had the opportunity, I said, I'm running this dude's bike on the cover. It's a good bike. This dude deserves it. I want to come through my word for this kid. So I did it, man. And he found out, he didn't even know that I popped that first. He's like, dude. I'm like, hey, I just had to start my own magazine to keep my word for you.
Here, I think I have so people could see.
Yeah, that's Eric Mills' bike. Yeah, yep.
That's killer for sure. So it sounds like a lot of it was more, you had the concept, and then it was really the conversation of how do we get from what I'm envisioning to a finished product. Was that?
Yep. That's it, man. I mean, I had, you know, he did, but you know, Englishman did a couple tweaks along the way that I did, you know, it was cool, man, you know, because that's his niche. That's what he does. You know, so I kind of give him a lot of free run when he does layout, you know. I mean, it's very few tweaks I got to do, man. He pretty much, you know, gets it. But we work good together, man. We just jive good together. I mean, we're friends outside of this, too. Like, I went back before Christmas and took him to Metallica concert, you know, for Christmas. I'm like, because he's, yeah, downtown Detroit. I'm like, hey, dude, I got tickets for Christmas. You want to go? He's like, yeah. So, you know, it just... He's just solid, man. He makes me look good.
How have you kind of moved from issue one and then starting to produce the other issues and determining how much to print? That's a big cost right there. And then also expanding into merch. Like, did you have that planned out ahead of time, or did you kind of just take it as it comes?
Well, merch, I pretty much had, you know, I actually had merch before I even had magazines done, just the t-shirt end of it. And then I started doing the hats, just some small stuff, getting into it, you know, just try to, you know, I'm trying to keep it simple. I don't want to overpower with a ton of different shirts and different hats, you know, maybe a couple styles. I don't want to overpower that because it seems to me like, let's say we'll use the horse for example. Everybody knows you see a horse shirt. It's the Charlie horse on the front, you know. It's just one of those things it's like Choppers. You see the one, you know, like yours, you have your tongue. I mean, it's one of those things, man, like the original one always seems the one that holds the best punch. Mm. So I'm trying to really stay with just the original one. I did create another one. I'm going to do some, I think, women's shirts with, you know, to, you know, gotta look out for the ladies. So, but yeah, just, you know, some, you know, trucker hats, a few things, you know, koozies, little stuff like that. Just, you know, some free stuff to give away.
Yeah. So that was already in the works before you even went to Prince, which is probably smarter than a lot of us.
Yeah, I thought I was doing an ass backwards.
But I, you know, I think we've covered this well in the podcast so far. Is the merch makes more money in a lot of ways than a magazine does because of the overhead differences are on it, and so you see a lot of magazines that spend a lot of time with their merch and that's why it's because really it's the way to help keep you afloat.
I feel like I give more away than I sell.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hey man, you know the saying, hey man, give me one of your shirts. I'll advertise for you.
Yeah.
And you know the story.
Yeah. Oh, I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, I really don't, because it's true. People will be like,
I know you heard it.
This is advertising for you. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sure. Thanks.
Thanks.
Just give me $20 in a shirt so I can buy one more.
Yeah. I'm glad that I gave you the $15 to wear that for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of a weird spiral into how do people approach you? Like, do you get the, you should run more baggers, or maybe you should do an adventure bike? I guess with a name like Traditional Chopper, you probably don't get that. But
yeah, I mean, honestly, dude, I'm getting hackled on the most, man, for not running any swing arm bikes.
Yeah.
And I'm getting guys that are like, hey, man, you don't run swing arm bikes? I'm like, well, I will, but it's got to be, you know, you bring me a swing arm bike, man. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like if somebody brought me like some sick digger that was a swing arm, like an old, you know, like a Survivor. Oh, yeah, I'd definitely run it, you know. But just, you know, nothing against it. You know, dudes build what they build. And I'm not knocking nobody, but if somebody just, you know, does a cool shovel, drop shocks, you know, so split tanks, a couple things. I'm like, yeah, dude, that's not traditional chopper stuff, bro. I mean, I don't, and I'm not knocking nobody, dude. Cause everybody,
it's not what your magazine is. Yeah, I don't know, because we'll do shows. Like we're doing one moto, which is one of the biggest shows in the country. We're doing that one couple weeks, and I could probably guarantee you in the 3 days we'll get at least 20 people ask us to run adventure bikes because it would make us more money, or I should do more baggers because more people ride them, or things like that. And again, like that gets back to it's a niche of an.
I just had to go through this because I'm doing the show up in Detroit, and I put a thing out because I'm doing 20 bikes in a showcase there, and I gave pretty much play-by-play what type of bikes. No baggers, no fat tire bikes. and I see, I got a chopper, though. Oh, yeah, I can already hear the people. You know, they just they can't grasp that concept. It's like, this is not. If you haven't read the magazine, you should not submit your motorcycle because it will tell you what you should submit.
Yeah. I don't think we have a huge problem with that, but we do two shows. We do Rally in the Valley, which is our summer. That's a ride-in, all comers. You know, anyone is invited. There's no entry fee. You know, best bikes win. And we do a few categories. We do you know, best chopper, best sportster, best foreign, and then best in show. And that one, when you show up, there's a sign that says choppers this way, other bikes that way. And it's not that we're telling you not to bring them, but it's make it clear what kind of show it really, really is. And then our fall show, it's an invitational, so you have to submit it. And so, you know, the last one, you know, we had a bunch of killer choppers, but we had Survivor original, like, you know, beautiful panhead or all original. We had a couple of drag bikes. We had three of those. We had British chops. We had you know, kind of the gambit in that way. We didn't do too many swing arms unless they were like of a really specific style. But yeah, the arguing with people when they kind of submit things is like, yeah, I guess it's a chopper, but if you want to enter and pay money to enter to something, which ours people don't pay for either of the shows.
Right.
But if there are shows, if you're like trying to do something like that and you know it's so outside like what every other bike there is. And not even saying that everything has to be same, but like if you're doing a big wheel Jesse James bike at a show where everything's pretty much mid to late 60s to mid 70s styled, like maybe you should look at what kind of show it is. And
there's
a million shows for that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of money behind that stuff. Not as much as there was in like 2000 to 2007 or 8, but
yeah. The heyday of the fat chopper.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I mean, I don't hate on anyone who wants to ride whatever, but.
Yeah, without a doubt. I agree.
I mean, anyone has their thing. But a couple years ago, I had a family member who bought one. And it was like, because they loved those shows. It was like a dream bike for them. And I was like talking to him and saying, well, that's, you know, great how much you pay for it. That's always eye-opening how much they cost, even still. And then I asked him, yo, you live in a place that's really a lot of turns and twists. How's the maneuverability of it? Yeah, you're right. That's why I'm going to buy another bike too. So I don't know. I guess that is hating on a particular bike, but I think everyone should love what they get, even if it can't turn.
Yeah, right. Like pushing a bowling pin down the road. You guys have seen that or drive roto man is like fighting. It's like, what the hell? Why is this thing won't turn?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm good.
It's hard to pivot a wheel that is that.
Yeah. Because what are you going like up the 360 on those things at that time or something like, yeah, I think it was like 360. I'm like, that is ridiculous. It reminded me of what those things you use for rolling for asphalt.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. That's what it reminded me of when I first seen them. Like, is that like an asphalt roller?
Well, yeah, totally. I get that immediately. I come from the carpet trade originally. That's what my family did. And so, you know, you have the heavy pin rollers and everything like that. So, shit, that was a rabbit hole of total spiraling out of control for a podcast. But let's back it back up because I'm interested in this actually now that we're talking about types of bikes and when you got into them. That's kind of the beginning of everything blowing up nationally for choppers and those kind of bikes. Were you doing stuff like that and then kind of got into the traditional stuff out of that kind of thing?
I'm gonna eat it. Yeah, my first bike was a 250 tire bike. I didn't have it very long, man. Then I built, you know, I did a 180 tire bike. I actually still have it. It's like my shop bike, you know. It's one everybody sees a Chop Docs bike, they know it, they see it, they, you know, it's got the dual carbs coming up, it's powder blue. And I still have that one. And that was the one, you know, I got into that. But then that's when I started really changing. And I did some long stretched out iron head for this guy and molded the tank. And they said everything started changing. I had some other iron heads and started getting, I actually did a 750 Honda chopper for a guy with a Finch Springer on it.
Oh, cool.
Which was pretty, it was pretty insane. But yeah, it started changing over to that, man. It kept going, that kept getting deeper and deeper, man. And it's just, yeah, I'm stuck there now.
Yeah. What were some of your influences kind of during those changing times? Like what were those phases?
A lot of it, Terry, another guy, TG Terry, he, you know, he was another guy, man, who helped me out a lot, man. You know, kind of guided me a little bit. And Terry always had cool stuff, man. He has a flathead 45, man. He still rides it everywhere. Cool chopper, Bob. You know, the dude's just always, you know, that one guy's always just have cool stuff, and he's just a cool dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Terry's that dude, man. He always has the cool stuff, man. He's not arrogant, he's just a cool dude, man. And, you know, Terry, I just kept on hanging around him. Me and him always go swap meets together. And I just started going, all right, dude, I'm not into this no more. I like this.
Was it like that? Did it feel like a switch to you, or was it more gradual than your?
No, it was more gradual. I mean, just like everything, you know, the trend started, you know, that trend of the, you know, 180, the 200, all that stuff. It was starting to fade out anyway. And I was already moving in another direction. And I've had some friends go, man, dude, you were just kind of too ahead of the time when I started doing the long bikes, the skinny long bikes. Mm. And I'm like, hey, you know, whatever. I still thought they were cool then.
Yeah.
But, and there's a lot of, you know, there's so many dudes like from up there in Michigan, you know, that are influential people that did cool stuff. And I learned a lot of stuff from, man. And I kind of picked up a lot of stuff from, you know, Fab Kevin for one. They said Terry play. I mean, these dudes were they weren't in no fat tire. They were like skinny 130. That's it.
Yeah. You still see a lot of the fat tire bikes in Florida, though, don't you?
Yeah, a little bit. I see them in my marketplace all the time. Somebody buys a power plant out of them.
Yeah. Which are most of those are like S&S, right?
Yeah, man. They got great drivetrains in them.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with an S&S Evo.
Yeah. What's your kind of what would you say is your biggest goal for traditional chopper magazine right now? Because like we've talked about how it started, we've talked about kind of you're doing events, you have the magazine, you're on a quarterly basis, but you have to have something kind of that's pie in the sky, what you want to reach for. And I'm always curious, like what that would be for someone.
I mean, for me, honestly, man, making that 1 year mark was like a goal, was a big, big, big goal for me. And it was huge. And it really was huge. Because, you know, people aren't, you know, you do 2-3 magazines, they're gonna see if you make it one full year, all of a sudden people will pay attention. You know, they're saying, okay, this guy's not some joker. You know, he can survive. So that was like one main goals, man, which I'm pretty proud of, you know, making that 1 year mark. Like really, like goal lies after that, man, just kind of get involved with some, you know, some great shows. You know, guys are doing some, you know, 1 or 2 day dinger weekend stuff, man. You know, supporting that stuff, supporting some of these dudes, and just try it, man. Just really try to keep this industry going, man. And, you know, between all of us magazine guys kind of curve this to keep it going the right direction, you know? And that's really, you know, that's really a lot of this magazine too, man, is to really just try to keep this culture alive, you know, and keep it driven and keep people wanting to, you know, read our magazines and like, dude, I got to do this. I got to build this, or I got to go out and chop my bike, you know, just to keep this industry going is most important to me.
Do you think it's at risk of not continuing?
Yeah, you know, look in 08, 09 when everything flushed. I mean, yeah, I watched everything flush. Everybody, I watched all the big names, you know, a lot of big name guys are gone. I mean, you haven't seen or heard from them since. Yeah, I think it's teetering right now. And I think a lot of people don't really know what direction to go. Some people are just in their lane and where they're staying, you know, and that's, hey, dude, that's cool because it's worked for me. So, but you have guys that are kind of like all over the place, you know, don't know what to do, or, you know, financially you're like, okay, you know, I can't afford to do this now.
Yeah.
So they're in, you know, different things. Same thing, you know, with our magazines, you know, money gets tight. They're not going to buy our magazine. They're going to go buy groceries. Which, hey, yeah. I understand it. I get it. Totally get it.
Yeah. But, you know, you think of the greater motorcycle industry has survived every major recession.
Yep.
Choppers have, you know, if you want to, depending on when you want to make that demarcation, right? If you're going to see the post-war bobbers or whatever, or if you're going to say late 60s counterculture on, have survived a lot of economic times. But to me, it sounds like you're not worried. That's the wrong word. I'm sorry to use it, but there's a feeling that maybe despite the economic situations, there might be something where you think the culture would fade.
I don't think it'll be totally faded out. I'm just saying some of it will. A lot of it's, you know, some of these younger dudes are growing up, they're getting older, have families. So they're going different, you know, it's like a blooming flower, I guess you'd say, you know? So, you know, they kind of, you know, got a family, start the stuff, and they kind of get away from it for a while. And eventually they make their way back. But it's just, it's, I don't know, it's a weird time right now. And I mean, like, but then you go to a show, man, and it's, you know, like Bike Week down here was packed, slamming. I mean, yeah. Every show was jam packed. And it's like, okay, cool. I feel better now, you know? But there's still always that one little bit always me with the uneasiness with it, man. It's just, you just don't know how it's going to be. I mean, I want it to stay strong. I want it to stay tough. I want everybody to thrive and do cool stuff and give us a bunch of bikes to shoot for our magazines. So, you know, I'm all about that, man. So,
I'm curious about it in a way because I don't think that it will ever stay at any certain level, right? I think that popularity or whatever will always ebb and flow, as will companies making parts and availability of that stuff. But I see now in 2024 more shows than in the last, you know, 10, 15 years. There's never going to be as many shows as there was in the heyday, you know, the up until the 90s. It's never going to go back to that, I don't think. But I see more shows popping up, like more shows of different people of different ages and different kind of backgrounds. I see more small parts builders coming back to the game of it. So I feel like that might come down, but there'll still always be people doing there. And now that we're all connected through the ridiculousness that's the internet, whether that's bad or good, there's the ability for someone in a garage to make a sandcast riser or whatever and sell it anywhere. Whereas, you know, before they were having to worry about if there was enough dudes who were into choppers in their town in North Dakota to do that. So,
right.
Like I, you know, I don't have the same concern, but I also, you know, can see where people think that the culture was one way and now it's getting diluted and watered down because of, you know, social media.
But I do agree with you. There is a lot of shows popping up this year, a lot, man. And I think a lot of people, and I said this a couple of years ago too, I think a lot of people like to do like the 2 day, 3 day dinger shows versus doing 10 days in Sturgis or 10 days in Daytona. Yeah. You know, these guys can go somewhere, you know, weekend warrior it, go party it up, you know, go to a chopper show. There's one that's actually picking up big speed in Georgia, the Grungle Run. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
You've sponsored the
Georgia Grungle Run
for 5 years or something like that. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, man, that dude's he's picking up some serious steam there, man. He's turning into a pretty big show, but there's a lot of good stuff popping up.
They do a lot.
Yeah. Yep. But, yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, that's good. I mean, it's good because that, you know, keeps the chopper community alive. And hopefully my gut feeling is wrong because, believe me, I want to be wrong on this. You know, don't think I'm jinxing it. I want to be wrong. It's just, you know, it's just my personal feeling.
Yeah. No, I get it. No, I'm not knocking it. It's everyone kind of sees things differently. But I definitely do hear from people that they're afraid that, like, the popularity is temporary and that it waters down the kind of feeling of the original. But at the same time, the original was 50, 60 years ago now, and we're in a totally different generation. And I'm saying that I'm in my mid-40s. I'm not a young guy. I'm just saying.
Yeah, neither am I.
like, I feel young, but I know I'm not. But, I've just, you know, at a certain time, like, your things will change. It's whether you do the work to try and make the changes for the good or not.
Well, what these dudes need to realize, man, this is just me from a builder's perspective, is you need to just build for yourself. Don't build to impress anybody else.
Yeah.
Build your own stuff, build your own way, build your own style. No matter what anybody thinks, just build your own. Because if you're building to impress other people, you're building for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And then, you know, you make a bike that's not even fun to ride.
Yeah, right. Or it's not rideable, period.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the difference between show bikes and go bikes. Like, where we align magazine-wise is both are, while there's bikes that could win shows that are, in quotes, show bikes in our magazines, mm-hmm. they're all go bikes. They're all pretty much functional. I think I've only run one bike that didn't run yet, but it wasn't a finished bike. The story was about someone building a bike for a show. So,
oh, is that the dude holding the bike up in the air?
Yeah.
That one? See, yeah. I read that issue.
Well, I appreciate it. But we're coming up on almost an hour. Try and keep our show here at Do You Even Chopper under an hour. I've been really stoked to talk to you so far, Ronnie, and I'm really excited about the magazine. I'm going to hold them up for the YouTube version of this so people know that you know, I am a client. I enjoy them and I'm stoked for them.
You only got the two copies? I got to send you some more.
Oh, I have more under here.
Do you really? Why'd you tell me? I just sent them to you.
Yeah, I have 1, 2, and 3 under here.
All right. Well, that's gonna get you 4, 5, and 6.
Right on. And I'll send you some more copies too.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I like doing the magazine swap thing. I think it's cool, man.
Yeah. No, I have like and the camera won't adjust or anything, but for people listening, like basically on the desk where my camera is, underneath is like all the kind of magazines that I get from other people and reading. So I could get them really quickly for these podcasts and pull them out.
Nice.
So anyway, I'm stoked. Thanks for taking your time on the weekend. You know, it's been fun. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Tim, for having me on. Thank you.
Do You Even Chopper podcast is available on Apple, Spotify, and other podcasting locations. You could also find us at thetonmag.com/podcast. If you'd like to subscribe and support the podcast, feel free to do so. It's not a hard sell, but every little dollar helps. We appreciate it greatly. The magazine itself is a quarterly print magazine published out of the Pacific Northwest, and you can find copies for sale and subscriptions at thetonmag.com/shop. We're on Instagram at thetonmag, as well as Facebook. And you can find us on YouTube at The Ton Magazine. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.